Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. And today I'm rejoined, by an old friend. It's Dr. Tom Hughes. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Now, it's springtime today. The sun's out. We're both in our shorts. It's sort of like we're both smiling.
Yes. Yeah, it's really nice that the weather's suddenly turned, seeing as the last week's been awful.
It has. I think we're, in comparison with recent times, I think we're going to get a bit of a heat wave this week.
Apparently so.
Okay, right. So for those of you who have been listening to these podcasts, Tom and I have recorded a couple now, and we've been focusing mostly on lower carb, higher fat nutrition for and looking at the theories behind that and then the practicalities for endurance athletes and triathletes in particular, training and using that sort of nutrition system. We're getting close to the race season and I'm starting to get questions, and I'm sure you are, from people who are confused as to how a lower carb, high fat day-to-day nutrition fits into racing, where we know that we need, particularly long distance racing, so 70.3 and above, where we know that we probably need to take in a few more carbs. So I thought today what we could do is try to give the listeners some practical advice on how they can manipulate their nutrition in the few days before their event and during the event itself.
Yep, sounds good to me.
So let's get started then. Let's take our mythical athlete. They've been following our lower carb. So by lower carb, we're not talking no carb. We're talking 150 to 200 grams of carbohydrate per day. They'd be more mindful of what they're doing. They've got 1 week to go now before their half Ironman or Ironman event. So on a global scale, what sort of changes do you think we should be making in those 7 days before the event to make sure we're ready on race morning?
Okay, so I mean that really, I just want to say that's an important distinction there between kind of no carb and the kind of ketogenic side of things and lower carb. The reason that's so important is because when you go very, very low carb and go ketogenic, not only, and that's normally combined with a kind of higher fat diet as well, different things happen and things change. When you start, you know, we know now ketones are a signaling molecule, and they may change things within the cell. That means the cell preferentially starts to burn more fat. But also at the same time, you're storing more fat, and actually you may be inhibiting your carb burning systems. And the ketones may directly influence that in reducing the enzymes to break down carbohydrates. The reason that's important is because that would then dictate how you change things, i.e. if you are going down the ketogenic route, and there are athletes that are trying that and are seeing if it works, generally what you find, or what often is found, is when you bring in carbohydrates, they don't really work as well, or they can actually kind of cause a lot more problems. So that's something to kind of bear in mind, is that we're now talking about what we believe is optimal, which is lower carb, using carbs strategically, but not going ultra low. So what you're doing then is you are still preserving the ability to use your carbohydrates, as well as using fats and being healthier as well. So that's the important distinction there. Because as I say, if we're talking about ketogenic things, we'd be having a completely different conversation, because I'd probably be saying that you would just keep everything exactly the same as your normal practice. Now, what we want to do in...
Can I interject there, Tom? If you were a keto athlete and you decided that you were going to follow this through to your race, my understanding is that you'd have to be much more mindful about injections of power and effort in your race there. Is that right? So you have to follow a much more even-handed approach to intensity throughout the event?
Yeah, to some degree. It's more, yes, because actually when you go, because when what they find, if you're on a long-term ketogenic diet, you still have a lot of glycogen. Don't forget that just, you know, you don't replace your glycogen with fat. You know, you still have less of it, but you're very, very sparing with it. And I found this. I did ketogenic for a long time. I did a good 6 months to a year fully ketogenic diet, and then I raced. Now, the first race, unfortunately, I didn't really ever think about the races that I was doing. And the first race was Bala. And Bala, as people know, is hilly, but not too hilly. But it is significantly hilly. And I went into the race, having not eaten the morning of the race. I just didn't feel like I wanted to eat. I'd had a meal the night before. I just had water on the bike, basically. Waxy maize starch, but actually it all formed down the bottom of the bottle because it doesn't actually mix in water alone. Yeah. So basically I didn't take in any carbs and I felt fantastic on the bike. You know, I came out of the swim, no gut distress at all, which has always been a problem of mine. One of the reasons why I got into that kind of diet, no gut distress, felt fantastic on the bike. And I'm not a great swimmer. I'd come probably 50th, 100th out of the water maybe. And at the end of the bike, I was in 8th. And I was absolutely hammering on, really enjoying the race. And then I was getting towards my kind of forte, the run. And I was running I was getting time splits from the marshals. And they told me at one point on the way back from the run that I was only 2 minutes behind the group that was basically second to seventh, almost running in a group together. And I was already taking huge amounts of time out of them. And then with about 2 miles to go, I had absolutely no idea where I was.
It's a hilly run in Ballon as well, though, isn't it?
It was a hilly run. And I remember an old gentleman coming the other way who said, "Come on, son, you can keep on running." And I was just like, "I'm sorry, what? What's going on?" And I bonked.
You probably looked like that Callum Hawkins on the...
I went from full gas to nothing in minutes.
Right.
I luckily got to the next aid station, who gave me a gel, which was something sweet. I don't know whether I actually absorbed it, but it got me through to the end of the race in 8th. And I was happy with that, don't get me wrong. But the point was that I hadn't appreciated that it didn't work for a hilly race because I dipped into my glycogen continuously over the hill course, you know, the hilly bike.
So that's right. So you're getting off the bike, you'd have probably still had some glycogen left in your system, but you were getting to the fumes.
I was getting right on the fumes.
Even with a, you know, it's almost impossible to have an even pacing strategy on that run because it's up and down, is it? Generally up, but up and down. So every little up, you'd have been dipping into your glycogen more and you ran out, basically.
Exactly. So then a few weeks later, I had Day in the Lakes, which everyone knows is an even hillier, pretty gnarly race, the Lake District. So I thought, well, I'll take on some more carbs, but I was still fully ketogenic and I was taking on more carbs, but I wasn't burning them because my body systems for burning those carbs have been significantly shut down. So, of course, same thing happened again. This time I was in third place and I bonked with 2 miles to go.
So you've gone from one extreme to the other, really?
Yeah. And that's why I say to people when I've done these talks is that ketogenic diets do not make you more metabolically flexible. That is a lie. They make you more inflexible the other direction. A balanced low carbohydrate and mixed carbohydrate diet at the right time can make you extremely flexible.
So let's just to clarify finally then this point about low carb. We're talking 200 grams a day, if that's the figure. There's 4 calories per gram in carbohydrate, right? So that's 800 calories a day. Now, if the average triathlete is consuming 3,000 calories, we're talking just below 30% there. And in the Western diet, 30% carbohydrate consumption per day is still probably about 50% of what most people get. So it is low carb in comparison to the average diet. And it's probably low carb in comparison to what most triathletes are consuming. But it's not no carb.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the important distinction for us to make.
But the key thing, I'm just trying to finish. After that experience, a month or so later, I did another race, a completely flat half Ironman. And that race, I went exactly the same strategy, nothing, just water. And I flew through it. And it was a completely different experience because it was steady state. So I didn't go in those constant glycogen spikes because there was no hills. So that's the thing, is it's all about horses for courses. It's all, yeah, there is those different things. So that's those considerations to bring in there.
So whilst this isn't a nutritional piece of advice, pre-course knowledge and your strategy for pacing and for nutrition are definitely linked.
Yeah.
So listeners, something else there. Make sure you have a good recce of the course. If you can't get to the course, have a look online and see some sort of course profile there, because that should definitely then shape how you approach the race in terms of where you put the effort in and where you put your nutrition in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right, Tom. So our lower carb athlete is coming into race week. Let's say we've got a race on the Sunday coming up. So it's Monday now. Let's say we've got a race next Sunday. We hear a lot about carb loading. Is there anything behind this? Do we need to carb load? How far do we need to go with it? And what adjustments do we make in race week? And at what time in race week do we start with them?
Well, the thing about carb loading is the research often shows that the original research that was not particularly well constructed, and actually there's some evidence coming out now that it was not only badly constructed but badly performed, was basically that you could take in a shed load of carbohydrates. You could also often go through a depleting phase, then take in a shed load of carbohydrates and performance would increase. However, when they've now done repeats those studies, they found that that's not really the case, because simply the more carbohydrates you have, the more glycogen stores you have, the faster you seem to burn them. And this is the whole argument with being lower carb and being more glycogen sparing, is it's all a balance, i.e. you may have less, but you may also burn less too. And that's the kind of critical thing, is that actually all they did when they had these carb-loaded athletes was make them a lot heavier, because they were storing a lot more. You've got to remember that glycogen storage is very heavy. You could go into race day with 4 or 5 extra kilos of relatively bloated weight that you don't necessarily need, but you'll just burn it a bit faster. And actually the end result in the recent studies has been pretty much the same in both groups. The studies that have shown that carbohydrates work well are the ones often where carbohydrates are supplemented at appropriate levels during exercise. Not big doses before, and not necessarily big doses afterwards, unless we're thinking about the subsequent bout. So that's the thing, key thing about the carbohydrate loading. I want you to instead, don't think about carbohydrate loading, think more about replacement and not being depleted. That's the critical thing.
So would we be increasing our 200 grams a day then in race week?
Not particularly. And apart from maybe the last few days, a slight increase, just ever so slightly, but we're probably only popping up to maybe 250 grams or maybe up to 300 grams. So it's a marginal increase, but actually it all depends on activity level.
Ah, right. So my supposition here is if you're reducing your activity levels and eating the same amount of carbohydrates, that's effectively carbo loading anyway.
Exactly.
Because you're not using as many. Yeah.
Exactly.
The bottom line here is we're not going to really increase our carbohydrate quantities on a daily basis by very much, if at all. It's just going to take place through reduced activity in race week.
Exactly. Yeah? Yes. And also when you're coming through to those days is making sure that that every session, when you are doing sessions, you are making sure that you're replacing the carbohydrates relatively soon after and around those sessions. Because what we often do is when we're training normally, particularly if we're lower carbohydrate, you might be doing some fasted training sometimes some training where you train and then don't eat afterwards, or maybe you're training late and you have a little bit here and there. And that's the thing, is what we want to try and do during that last week is try and remove the energy fluctuations, because what we find is that within, energy fluctuations can sometimes have a knock-on effect a week or two later. So if you go through a large energy deficit, and I've seen this in other athletes I've coached who've gone through 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 days of hard training, not fueling as much because they weren't used to eating as much. So maybe they've gone to a training camp. Now they felt great for the camp and then they crashed the week later. Now, we know now they maybe have an infection and these things. It's because they were slightly underfueling around those sessions then. But the knock-on effect can often take a few days for the body to almost suddenly... It works on, because what happens is when we take that training load or we do that training, there's a lot of adrenaline, there's a lot of cortisol. Now, cortisol is designed to keep us alert and going and then fall off a cliff. That's often why people find they get ill when they've finished nights or they've done the stressful stuff, and then suddenly they rest and they get ill, because the cortisol stops you, almost delays the what will become inevitable. And that's often what's happening when we're training, is that where cortisol keeps us from, basically allows us to keep going, then we fall off a cliff. So what happens in taper week, often people train really hard in the weeks leading up to taper week. They are energy fluctuations all over the place. They come into taper week and the body goes into rest mode, and they not only feel awful, they want to train, but also they often get basically these lethargic feelings. And it's the body saying, whoa, you've given us time to rest now. Let's take some rest. And actually, that's what you, but the key thing is a lot of people then think, well, maybe I'm not training enough during taper week or this thing or no. You need to make sure that in those few weeks before a big race, your energy fluctuations, i.e. if you train hard, you consume, you know, and that's the thing. You go out for, you know, let's say 2 weeks before a race, you go out for a 5 hour bike ride. Don't drink water for 3 hours and then try and stuff it all at the end. Take it every 15 minutes. Be the person that starts eating a flapjack within 5 minutes of the ride at the start. You don't need to, this is no, you know, don't need to be a hero. And that's the thing, is that the people we don't understand, because these things will not make us, and it's the same as things like protein. A lot of athletes, particularly, you know, it tends to happen in athletes going more towards kind of vegan and vegetarian diets with the fluctuations in proteins, is that sometimes if you don't take in like protein and things around after training sessions, the knock-on effect can sometimes be days or weeks later, not the immediate day. You won't feel it that day, you won't feel it the next day, but yeah, you'll start to crash. And that's what we need to bear in mind.
One of the things I've started doing with tapers in recent years, I know we're maybe going slightly off the subject here, is to start a taper 3 to 4 weeks out by having a week of really easy training to allow the athlete to get rid of all the fatigue and just freshen up a bit. But then we introduce a moderate training week. So if they've been averaging 15 hours a week, we go down to 5. So then those feelings of, you know, feeling slightly ill and, you know, a bit under the weather go. And then we introduce a couple of weeks at moderate level to maintain the fitness and then come back down again. So it's not such a shock to the system. Seems to work a bit better than a drastic drop off in race week and those feelings of, you know, panic when you've got a sore or what you think is a sore throat. Yeah. Okay, so our athlete has started their taper, or they've started their race week. We'll call it race week. So we're really saying don't adjust your eating very much for those first 2 or 3 days. But let's say we get to Wednesday now. So the race is coming up. We're probably starting to feel a bit more apprehensive every time as we have a thought about the race. The heart rate goes up when you think about the swim start or that marathon that you've not sort of competed at before. Are we going to make any other changes? So, for instance, if we're on our lower carb diet, we're probably taking in more fiber, more fruit, more vegetables. Now, we know that those are the things that the doctors advise us to eat because they keep us regular with our bathroom visits. But we don't want that on race morning, surely. So are we going to make some adjustments there at some point in the week?
Yes. And this is the thing about this side of things is that almost invariably when people make these adjustments, and the people that have often had lots of distress and issues around this, particularly around the actual race, making these changes has been extremely positive. Now, the reason that happens is kind of twofold. A lot of it's viewed as often this idea of the fiber. We want to reduce fiber the day or two before because we don't want to be bulked up with all this fiber. But actually, there's more to it than that. A lot of it comes down to the gut microbiome. When you are taking in fiber, what you are doing is you are feeding your gut bacteria. That is exactly what you're doing. Now, we have a balance of good and bad. There's no real such thing as good and bad. It's all about the balance. You don't want a lot of E. coli, but you have them there. They're an important species. You want lots of bifidum and various other supposedly good species, but you don't want too many of those either. It's all about a balance. The critical thing is that fruits and vegetables, particularly fruits will tend to feed a lot of the bacteria often up in the higher parts of your GI system. Whereas your very fibrous kind of vegetables tend to get all the way down to the lower part where a lot of your bifidum live. And that tends to be why healthier diets tend to be more predominant in vegetables and fibrous vegetables, not fruits. Now, I'm not a fan of fruit. I'll say it and I'll say it again. If I don't eat fruit, I don't believe it's healthy. I believe the types of fruit we eat now aren't particularly healthy. Partly because the things you can get from fruit, you can get from vegetables. Like there's a lot of vegetables, for instance, a lot of green vegetables have more vitamin C than an orange does. You know, just an example.
So just move these oranges and bananas away from our eye line while we're talking.
Yeah, the other thing about fruit is that it's one of those things that upsets a lot of people because there are certain species of bacteria that can live further up the gut that love fructose. So you have a lot of fruit and they all feed those bacteria. And that's why a lot of people that eat a lot of fruit sometimes get lots of bloating, winded.
Are we talking about all fruits here? Are there some fruits, apples better?
Not really. That's the thing, is that they're all, anything that's sweet, that sweetness in a fruit is your fructose. So anything that's sweet, and most fruits have been bred now to be ultra sweet. So bear in mind that your dark, dark berries are probably the only exception to that rule.
However, berries are often referred to as superfoods.
If you could find a blueberry in the wild, you should eat it and see it's not sweet. That's the key thing is that even the blueberries, even the dark fruits that we've had, the berries have been bred to be ultra sweet. Now, the key thing is that when it comes to fructose and these things, it's all about a threshold. So I'm not saying now to go out and throw away all your fruit, but if you're eating more than one or two pieces a day,
I'll bring it back here then.
Yeah. If you're eating one or two more pieces a day, you might actually be worth cutting it down simply because it's all about a threshold theory, i.e. you can digest a bit of fructose, but if you take in a big load of, let's say, fruit juice, which is why fruit juice is very unhealthy, it goes to your bacteria. Now, when it comes to those bacteria, your good ones, your better ones, bifidum and those ones, they like your fibrous, but actually your E. coli, they like the fructose. So, okay, so the point, we'll go back to, we'll finish it on a point of the last 3 days for a race, actually reducing your sugar intake, reducing your fruit and your sweet intake can actually shift your bacteria in a few days, which means on race day, you can take in more sugar that your body will need and have less best bad effects, basically.
So we're probably all right to keep eating salads then and vegetables with our meals, but just avoiding the fruits.
Yes.
And definitely the fruit juices.
Yes.
Good. Okay. So, and I like that one. Bananas are not my favourite food. All right, so we're going to reduce our fruit from what, the Wednesday, you said, probably about 4 days
about
out.
3 day shift in muck biome, so 3 to 4 days. So, yeah, so about the Wednesday. You won't lose anything by not having it, trust me.
My normal advice is if athletes are going to take that one last big effort to load up their fuel cells, because glycogen storage in the muscles is like the fuel tank in your car. We have a full limit. Unless we've trained to increase the size of them, we've got a full limit. And once they're full, then anything else we take in is just stored aside in the cells in the body. So there's no point in overeating. All we need to do is make sure that they're topped up. And as we've already said, with the reduced amount of training, that shouldn't be too difficult as long as you've been mindful about your eating around your other training sessions. But my advice has always been, if you're going to do this, do it 2 days before the race. So if you're racing on a Sunday, it would be the Friday, and Friday is probably a good day, 2 days out, to concentrate on your admin for the race, going and registering. You probably go to the race briefing there, and you might pay a visit to the expo. So it's a good day for getting all of that other stuff done, not thinking about training. Do you prefer something like that, or would you prefer people to be doing it the day before the race?
No, I think you're right. That's the point, is that at the end of the day, you're not trying to load. We're trying to not deload. So basically, you just add it in, but add it into each meal. So, you know, let's say, you know, you want to have the day 2 days before. If you're used to having, let's say, a smoothie in the morning, a green smoothie with coconut milk or something along those lines, you add half a sweet potato to it. You know, your lunch, you have a salad with a bit of potato or some, you know, quinoa or some couscous or something with it. And then an evening meal, you have a potato or rice or something. So you add a bit of carbohydrates to each meal of the day. So it's not 500 grams in one go. Because the problem is that people don't have that. They travel the day before. Like, let's say they travel Friday. They get depleted on the Friday. Then they have a pasta party late on the Saturday. They take in huge amounts of a big load of carbs. And the thing is, as we said before, if you take a big load of shed load of carbs in, actually, you just burn more. So you actually might, the next morning, having burnt more glycogen overnight, because actually your body was like, well, I need to burn all this off. And actually it was less sparing with it. And it will go into the race, possibly less sparing. This is what I believe it was either, it might have been either Tijon Sindabale or Rasmus Henning, one of them. I think they might have been both of them. They've experimented with low carbohydrate. And they found that when they were low fat during the week, or sorry, low carb during the week, then had a big carb load the night or the day before, they started off amazingly well and they were hammering it at the start of the race and the start of the bike. They felt fantastic. And then they fell off a cliff and they bonked and they were awful. However, they mediated it over 2 or 3 days. And Louise Burke's research as well has proven this. They actually, you get a slow push down of your fat oxidation, but you also then nicely top up and you don't go extreme the other way. So that's the thing, is that it's almost like you could do that maybe for Olympic distance. to get this sudden injection of fuel the next morning. But they, these athletes found that they had this amazing engine to start off with, and they fell off a cliff because they were not glycogen sparing in the race.
Okay, well, that's good then. So we do it. We're doing it on the Friday, but we're trying to just be even-handed about our increase rather than one huge meal. And hopefully with no training then and reduced training, everything's pretty much full on Saturday morning. So we're probably going to do a little bit of training the day before just to turn the legs over and turn the arms over, maybe go and have a recce around the swim course. So we will need to do some fueling, but not huge amounts, probably grazing throughout the day, probably a lesser amount of the just the few food intake you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. That sound about right?
Yep.
Okay. I guess we should also point out at this stage that the metabolism will probably be revved up a little bit because you'll be starting to get a little bit nervous now. So the heart rate will be a little bit higher. You may be burning through your energy just a little quicker than you would do normally. You aren't going to be completely inactive because as well as fitting in your training, you're probably going to go along to the race venue. You're going to rack your bike. You're going to put your bags up on the racks and just get ready. So everything's going to be just moving a little quicker. What would we be doing for the evening meal? You've sort of hinted there in the way you said that, made some comments a few moments ago, that perhaps that huge, great big carbohydrate meal on the night before the race isn't the best strategy.
Yep. Well, if you look again, you look at the most successful elite athletes, they all seem to come to the same principle, and it's almost always the same meal. I mean, I've had the same meal before a race almost for the last 3 years. I always have fish because I find it quite... Basically, it just sits really nicely. Plus, also, I've got this weird joking theory about swimming.
I'm thinking, is it going to make you swim faster? So don't eat prawns then. Have tuna or something that we know is fast in
exactly.
water.
Exactly. But I avoid a few couple of things. I avoid, for me, it's prawns because actually I've got a bit of a shellfish sensitivity. And I have just basically something very basic. As I say, I avoid vegetable, like kind of big load of vegetables. And, you know, most elite athletes have something like chicken and rice.
Yep.
You know, just something basic protein, basic bit of rice.
Yep.
And actually, it's remarkable. And it might be because they're copying everyone else, or it might be just the fact that that is a nice, easy amount. You want to eat, as I say, a good amount, but not too much. You don't want to be hungry. And you want to eat at a good time. You know, 6 o'clock, you don't want to be eating at 8, 9 o'clock. You know, you want to be eating at 6 o'clock, a few hours, you know, a couple of hours before you head off to relax and go to bed so that you can shut down. Because if you're eating at an hour or two before you go to bed, you think you're getting better sleep than you are. We've been discussing this. But you just have, you know, a handful of rice. You don't overdo it. You don't have too little. You don't have no carbs, but you don't have a shed load.
I have been of the sort of theory recently that if you have a normal evening routine, that you should try not to disrupt that. So I like to enjoy a small glass of wine before a night before a race. Now, I know that a lot of people look at me and sort of, you know, that their eyes are raised or eyebrows are raised a little bit. But, you know, to be honest, it's a small glass. I don't think that the alcohol's going to do me any harm at that stage. Might help to relax me a little bit more. It keeps me in my normal routine. Have you any thoughts on that sort of thing?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've always been stressed about races and these things. There's a race a couple of years ago, one of my favourite races, and had I possibly run ever so slightly better, then I would have finally won the race that I was trying to win. Now, I always stress night for races. I was trying to get everything. And I couldn't do that this time because we were traveling up and we were going to eat somewhere where I couldn't control everything. And I said, Joe, what? I'm not that bothered about tomorrow. We had a nice little meal together, me and my wife. And we had a glass of wine at this nice restaurant. And I think I had a risotto. I had some fish to make sure I had my fish. And I had a bit of wine and I relaxed and I did the best ever in that race. Because I was relaxed. So yeah, I completely agree with that. In that actually, again, it's the same thing. Almost every athlete that performs well in a race finds whatever they like to do that helps them relax. And the amount of athletes that say that they have a glass of wine before and right before a race is ridiculously high. Mm. Some people have a shot of whiskey. You know, at the end of the day, that's the point, is that it's all about being relaxed, more important than anything else.
Well, you did touch on sleep there, and just moving aside from the nutrition, sleeping the night before a race, it's always difficult to come by. I struggle to get to sleep, so I don't see any point in going to bed earlier than I would normally because I just lie there frustrated. But I've heard on many occasions that some athletes, even some very high profile athletes, just can't get to sleep at all before a race. In a nutshell, how much of an impact will this have on your race performance the next day?
Oh, from personal experience, very little. However, the recovery race I've really struggled with is when I've had bad sleep on the Friday night.
Right.
So the two nights before, have the best sleep you possibly could. The race I was in question was actually traveling out to Roth. Because of roadworks and problems, we end up being delayed by 5 or 6 hours. So my Friday night sleep was about 4 hours. That was a real problem and I felt dreadful. But no, actually, I've gone, the Saturday, the night before the actual race, I've had 2 hours sleep going down to Vitruvian. I've had 8 hours sleep. And actually, we've shown in research that one, and I'm reading and listening to a book at the moment about sleep. The research shows that one night of poor sleep, because of you are then racing, because of the cortisol, because of the adrenaline, you absorb it, you perform exactly the same. Two nights, that's when you crash. And that's the key thing. So make your Friday, you know, have your, you know, on Friday night, you have your, you know, you wine, you relax, you're at the race, make sure you're at the race venue. If it's a big race, you'll be at an Ironman. You've got to be there on the Friday night to relax, get everything sorted, have a lie in. There's no reason to get up. Well, you know, if they're doing a swim recce at 6 o'clock in the morning, you say no. You know, that's the point. Unless you are normally up at 5 o'clock, that's the point. You have a great sleep on Friday night and don't stress about Saturday.
So it's all about the sleep in the week previously rather than the night previously. And to me, if you have to get up and pootle around and read a book, then that's fine. I find that there's nothing more frustrating than lying in bed, trying to get to sleep and not being able to. I think I even heard that Steve Redgrave couldn't sleep before his Olympic medal winning races. So he just used to have a nighttime routine for the night before the event.
Yeah. Well, actually,
to do him anyhow.
I told you the quick story about Meb Kalflangzi, completely butchered his surname now, I'm afraid, who's the American runner who won Boston Marathon at the age of 40. He used the same. He used to stress about not being able to sleep. And then he found that when he woke up in the night, the night before race, he would just go and he'd start having a bit of basically his carb kind of, you know, he'd replace his carb. So he'd have a sandwich, he'd chillax, he'd wander around. If he felt sleepy, he'd go back to sleep. And then he started winning the race, basically. And he says that, you know, actually not only did that help the carb side of things, it stopped him from stressing that he wasn't sleeping.
Should add there that if you choose to follow this routine, it's not automatically going to make you a race winner.
No, exactly. He's a bit of a special.
All right. So you've neatly brought us then to race morning. Now, there's always a lot of debate about breakfast, whether you should be eating anything. Assuming that your Ironman half Ironman start is 7 a.m., then you're going to be getting up early anyway to get to the race venue to get all your pre-race admin done. Are you a fan of consuming any nutrition in the morning before the race? And if so, at what time, in what quantity? And what type?
Well, again, I mean, we discussed before about some of this can be tested sometimes, and that's something to get into at another stage, testing kind of your response to food. But actually, part of it is practice. But I like to make sure that if you're having, you know, having carbohydrates the morning of a race, generally, most people will say that it helps. Now, some elite athletes that are doing Ironman sometimes have had up to 1,000 calories of ridiculous amounts of food, and some just have a little. And I find settling your stomach is the most important. But I think maximum kind of, you know, basically don't eat anything within 2 hours, because what you want, if you're going to have carbohydrates, in order to preserve your fat oxidation during a long race, you want to have had the carbohydrates go in, produce the insulin response, go into the glycogen, and then back to baseline before the start of the race. And you're looking at about, for most athletes, 2 to 3 hours. So have, you know, if you have a big bowl of porridge then, and get, you know, practice and see if it fits with you. You probably don't need anything heavy. You know, you don't maybe, you know, some people are having like kind of eggs and bacon. And whilst those things may make you kind of feel full, they may come back to bite you a little bit because they may stick around too long. You know, those kind of complex foods could be, the second you start racing and your digestion drops, they could be in your system then for 4 to 5, 6 hours, which may inhibit your ability to take on race fuel. So keep it simple. You know, I tend to have my one is basically a sweet potato kind of smoothie type thing. So basically my normal smoothie, which I normally have, you know, it normally has a little bit of protein, a bit of whey protein, a bit of, you know, maybe some Greek yogurt, and a bit of collagen proteins. So I've got a good amount of 20-30 grams of easily digestible protein, with some sweet potatoes, some oats, taken. And I tend to, what I do is I kind of eat it over half an hour to an hour period as I'm starting to get ready at the hotel room. And then 2 hours, nothing at all. Just a bit of sip of water here and there leading up to race start. Resist the urge to throw in a gel, because although that gel might make your swim a fraction faster, if it pushes you into carb burning mode, then it actually could make your Ironman, which is what we're talking about really, an hour slower if you're going to, fight that kind of fat oxidation.
If you've done nothing between getting up and getting to the race and just potted around, checking your transition bags, checking your tyres on your bike, and then just sitting in the corner listening to some music, then taking that gel is really just a psychological crutch.
Yeah.
And it's unnecessary based on what you're saying. You're refueling, you're topping up of your liver, should have been done when you got up.
Yeah. So
if you've got a 7 o'clock start, we're talking about consuming that food around 4 a.m., 4:30, really.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just sipping on some water. Maybe if you're going to take any, if you want carbohydrates, a very, very mild carbohydrate solution, if anything, in the lead up to the race, but certainly sipping on water if it's getting warm. And then we get to the start of the race. So we're going to have, for the best swimmers who are listening, probably around an hour in an Ironman, half an hour in a 70.3. For the not so fast swimmers, it could be up to 2 hours of steady swimming to get to the end. There's also a fair amount of nervous energy burnt before the race as well, particularly for those who aren't as comfortable with the swim. The next part of the strategy is what carbohydrates or what fuel are we going to consume on the bike and the run? Now, I've always believed that the majority of it's got to be on the bike to fuel yourself for the run, and because it's easy to digest stuff while you're not jumping around. The scientists, of which you're one, Tom, will tell us that we need at least 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrates. That's the optimal per hour. But whenever I've tried to consume that amount from gels and bars and drinks, it just makes me feel nauseous at some point in the run. And on most of my triathlons, on my Ironman races, I've thrown up. So is there an optimal amount? If so, what's it going to be? And how are we going to take it in what sort of constituency? Gel, liquid, solid?
Well, the key thing is that you can absorb about 60 grams of glucose per hour. And this is the whole idea of adding in kind of fructose. It might be best if we kind of go over this in detail at some point, because it becomes a big, big topic.
That's another podcast then.
Yeah, I think we'll probably go into that on a different topic. I think actually thinking about, well, the start off is having the 60, kind of roughly 60 grams per hour of glucose is what sets the, that's about the limit of what we can kind of absorb. That's why we do have breakfast. That's why we have something before, because you're getting a kind of jump start on that and getting it in before you then start losing kind of time as such. But everyone's variable. If you are burning more fat and becoming more glycogen sparing, you may be able to get away with a little less. But actually, we still find that even in steady state, in even relatively low steady state, we are burning quite a lot of that glucose. But it's all about then the forms that you start taking it in. And as I say, those go into big topics, partly experimenting. But adding in small amounts of fructose. I don't like a big load of fructose, because I believe that that kind of could upset the stomach and that side of things as well.
Have you got any particular favourites on the commercial nutritions that are out there? Because we, as coaches, we're always asking, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Are there any out there that are really any good, or are they really just the same with different brand names?
Essentially, most of them end up being pretty much the same. Like people I know some companies will say that certain maltodextrins are better than others, the different grades and qualities. I like something called cyclic dextrin just because I find it relatively easy on my stomach. It's basically a kind of a polymer of glucose. So basically it's like a chain, a bit like maltodextrin, but it just seems to sit nicely on my stomach. But actually most of them end up pretty much the same, really. And actually most of us, it's just about finding what works for you, really, more than anything else. And having confidence in that is probably more important than anything else.
And what do you prefer, or would you prefer your athletes to take solids or a mixture or only liquids, or do you grade it? So the further away from the run you are, i.e. the start of the bike, you take some solids because they'll obviously take longer to digest, and then you move on to liquids as you get closer to the run.
So solids can be good for some people, but not for others. I would like, if you are going to take them in, I take them towards the start of the bike so that you have more time to digest. And if you are going to take them, chew them. Make sure you don't just inhale them. Otherwise, you don't really ramp up your digestion very well and they just kind of sit there.
Some people say that you shouldn't take anything for the first 30 minutes on the bike after the swim. Is there any substance behind that?
Yeah, it probably just gives you a bit of time to relax everything down, both, you know, that kind of, that, you know, being hyped up, but also your digestion. And you're kind of in that hour then period after that, it's probably a good time if you're going to take some solids in, particularly if you are going to be out there for longer, or you're on something like a race like Wales that's a bit more of an expedition than it is full-on race.
Yeah, it is for most of us.
It is.
But definitely be trying to get most of your calories in on the bike.
Yeah, I think that's the best place generally to get them in, setting yourself up for a good run. So on the run, you just need to take in small amounts of liquid calories through things like Coke that work really, really well.
Yeah, okay. And I think, as most people would know, that's when you start to feel nauseous, when your stomach starts getting sort of sloshed around a little bit more. So it is often the challenge to actually take anything in then. But if we look at the heart rates of most people, they're probably down in that sort of lower end here. And it's not going to be the same as for most triathletes doing this race. It's not going to be the same as doing a marathon. So they will be trending back towards a fat burning zone, even if it takes an hour or so for them to get back in there and for their energy systems to convert over to that. That'd be right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So let's see if we can summarise then, Tom, mm-hmm. with 5 or 6 points that they can take away from this call. So the first thing is that we want to be doing in race week.
Again, the first thing I think is that making sure you're not getting carb depleted. So that might be possibly slightly increasing carbs to give you a little leeway, but just making sure they are well positioned in your day and throughout your work, around your workouts. Just make sure that you just don't become depleted at any stage during that week and that you are fueling well around the workouts and throughout each day.
Yeah, and I think that was the point that I noted here, was that you wanted to make sure, not that we were carb loading, but that we weren't becoming carb depleted.
Yes.
And as we said earlier, the reduced activity in that race week, if you keep eating normally, that will enable you to naturally load up on your carbohydrate storage.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So the next point then was reducing fruit and veg intake.
Yep. We discussed that. Well, I think reducing that fruit intake about 3 days before is normally 3 or 4 days before is about right. Vegetable intake, a slight decrease, but you don't need to worry as much about that one as you do about the fruit, I don't think.
Okay. So that's good then. You can still have your salads. You can still have your tomatoes, and we know tomatoes are actually reasonably good source of carbohydrate, yeah?
Yep.
But not considered a fruit in this instance.
No, because they're cutting a bit more balanced, so they don't have that big fructose load.
Number three then, proven breakfasts.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to be, would you want to be testing it in race week, or would you have done this before?
No, I think you've done that before, but also if you are, start having that breakfast each morning at the same time, just so you get used to it. You know, it might not be as early as race morning because you're probably not going to be, or probably shouldn't be up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But using, making sure that it's something that sits well, but you know the boundary between, we've all been in that situation where we've eaten too big a meal, but we only knew about it being too big a meal half an hour later. So make sure you know that boundary.
Good one. You said that we should start shifting to simpler carb sources.
That's in reducing the fibrous sources the couple of days before, but also in the race itself, going slightly shifting towards slightly simpler sources. But as I say, I think we can talk about that in depth in a future podcast when we talk about that kind of ins and outs of real race nutrition. But generally simpler when you're more stressed works a little better in terms of absorption than more complex stuff.
Okay. And number five, we had experiment with addition here, but actually I think I might like to change that to going off nutrition to the sleep, because I think that's an important point there.
Yeah,
people
definitely
worry about that. So just reiterate what you said about sleep in race week.
Well, basically sleep is more important, it's paramount, particularly that Thursday, Friday, the days leading up to the race, not eating too late so that you're not disrupting your sleep, not doing things, not having too much caffeine, all those things, making sure you're getting really good quality sleep in those few days. And then you don't have to worry too much about the Saturday night, the night before.
Great. Well, there you go, listeners. We've given you 5 points. We've had 45 minutes of conversation on exactly what you should be doing with your race week nutrition and what you should try to avoid. I think the thing that I get out of this as well with speaking to Tom is that the routine that you have in race week should be tried and trusted. You shouldn't really be experimenting with a new system of nutrition in the week before your biggest race. And that is really what B races are for in your season. On one race, you maybe want to have your sole focus being around what you do in the 7 days before for your nutrition, and then dialing in your race day nutrition so that you know it works, including testing that breakfast, testing different ways of taking your carbohydrates and fuel in on race day, including whether you should have solids, at what point you should have them, and in what quantity, so that when you stand on the start line of your A race, you don't need to be worrying about whether you've got the right formula. You already know that you've got the right formula.
Yep.
Sound advice, Tom?
Yep, perfect.
Great. Well, that's it from Tom Hughes and myself. That's our third podcast together. It's getting to be a bit of a habit, this. And I think if you picked up from our conversation, Tom and I will be returning fairly soon to talk about
race nutrition, the actual in the race, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And quantities and all of this stuff about fructose and sucrose and more sciencey stuff. So you'll need to get your science heads on for that one. But for now, it's goodbye from
Tom.
And it's goodbye from me. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with another great guest. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com, and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.